possibly even somewhere up to the first week of January, somewhere between the 23rd or 24th of December and the first week of January, we will see changes to the House bill. They'll send it back to the House. The House will eat those changes and the Build Back Better bill will be enacted somewhere around Christmas time.
Hey there, gang. Bill Sheridan here with episode number 160 of Future Proof. How y'all doing? Hanging in there? I hope. Hope y'all had a great Thanksgiving. Hope you had a happy Hanukkah if you're among those who celebrate. Gearing up now, I guess, for the next big thing on the calendars, which, there's the December holidays to look forward to. But for our profession, the next big thing is, of course, tax season. So, you know, from here on in, it's all taxes all the time, man. And that's what we're talking about this week. My guest this week is Edward Carl. Ed is Vice President of Taxation for the American Institute of CPAs. He's also a member of the Maryland Association of CPAs, my employer, full disclosure. And he's got his finger on the tax pulse of our nation, I'd say more than almost anybody. So he's going to break all of this down here for us in just a couple of minutes. First, let's get things kicked off this week with this. This week's show is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. So taxes. Lots to talk about here. Most of it related to recent legislation, right? Let's start with President Biden's infrastructure package, known formally as the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, estimated at $1.2 trillion, signed into law on November 5th. A number of tax provisions in there. Accounting Today recently ran through some of them in an article titled The Tax Impact of the Infrastructure Act. Topping the list, tax-wise, and reading straight from Accounting Today here, let's start with cryptocurrency. The act expands cryptocurrency reporting requirements in an effort to stem underreporting of cryptocurrency transactions. Then there's the Employee Retention Credit. The American Rescue Plan Act of 2021 extended the Employee Retention Credit to December 31st. First, 2021, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act legislation eliminates the credit for wages paid after September 30th, 2021. However, with the enactment after the start of the fourth quarter of 2021, some concern has been expressed about the retroactive application of the elimination of the credit. That gets a little confusing really quick. We'll hear more about this one from Ed Carl here in just a moment. Next, employer-sponsored retirement plans, the relaxation of minimum funding requirements for employer-sponsored retirement plans is further extended, adding to tax revenue projections as funding requirements are decreased. And there are a number of other provisions related to things like contributions to water and sewer utilities, private activity bonds, excise taxes, Superfund excise taxes, disaster relief, and extended tax deadlines due to service in a combat zone. So again, that was information from an Accounting Today article titled The Tax Impact of the Infrastructure Act. Now, the other piece of legislation that tax pros are watching carefully is called the Build Back Better Act. This one tops in at almost $1.7 trillion and includes a lot of funding for programs related to the social safety net, as well as higher taxes on corporations and the wealthy. Now, the bill calls for a one-year extension of the expanded child tax credit, an extension of the expanded earned income tax credit, a cap on state and local tax deductions, and an expanded premium tax credit, among other provisions. The catch here is that this bill is still very much a work in progress, right? It passed the House on November 19th, but the Senate still has to weigh in, and it's really anybody's guess what's going to happen there. So Yeah, lots to pay attention to as tax season approaches. And that's why I'm really glad that Ed Carl is here to help us make sense of it all. Again, Ed is Vice President of Taxation for the AICPA, and he takes a deeper dive here into both of these pieces of legislation and what they mean for tax pros. Also, we talk a bit about what's going on at the IRS, right? The Build Back Better Act also includes a proposal to strengthen the IRS through about $80 billion in additional funding. And this is John Koskinen. He points out in a Barron's article, he says, quote, after years of being significantly underfunded, the IRS, as a result, is now providing levels of customer service that no one at the agency or elsewhere thinks is appropriate, CPAs among them. That was my little addition there. And with the audit rate down by 50% from where it used to be, billions of dollars of taxes owed are not being collected, end quote. So yeah, IRS customer service is at the top of everybody's mind as tax season approaches. And Ed Carl also offers some insights into that as well. So an important conversation this week with busy season on the way. Here is my conversation with Ed Carl. So, Ed, thank you for being here. I guess my first question is, we are a year now, or close to it, into Joe Biden's term. What's standing out for you from a tax perspective? How has the reality of a Biden administration aligned or not with your expectations from a year ago?
Well, as things usually happen, Bill, and thanks for having me again. I appreciate it. Things in Washington are all over the place. Some things meet expectations, some don't, and things are changing, frankly, on an hourly basis. So I think the main things that we should talk about are the infrastructure bill that was signed into law a week or so ago, 2 weeks ago, and then the Build Back Better bill.
So let's start with that infrastructure bill then. That was certainly some contentious negotiations to get that done and over the line. What are you seeing in this bill that has implications from a tax perspective?
So the infrastructure bill, and that's the traditional infrastructure dealing with bridges and broadband and roads, that one was relatively bipartisan in nature, particularly in the Senate, where you had 19 Republican senators vote to approve that bill. It was not under the reconciliation instructions where it only needs a simple majority. It needed 60 votes to pass. You have 50 Democrats in the Senate and gain 69 votes of approval. That was in August. Mm-hmm. It went to the House in August, and that's where things became contentious, where it became aligned to the second bill, which is the Build Back Better bill. That one is purely Democratic. There's nothing bipartisan about that second bill. All right, so you asked the first bill, infrastructure, the traditional infrastructure bill, what of a tax nature was in there? There were only a handful of items. I'll mention three of them. One has to do with Internal Revenue Code Section 7508 Cap A, which deals with the IRS's ability to defer due dates and payment dates in a disaster situation. And we face those all the time. I mean, the most recent that I can recall was this Hurricane Ida, which hit the Gulf Coast, moved up the Eastern Seaboard, and then hit primarily New Jersey and New York. I know that we in Maryland got a lot of rain out of that, but they had terrible flooding in New Jersey and New York, and they had returns deferred until January. That was under 7508 Cap A. There were some technical fixes to 7508A that were, there were changes enacted 2 years ago, and a couple of the provisions didn't really work well, and those were fixed. I'll say the second thing, what may be the most controversial item, was the rules dealing with broker reporting of crypto asset transfers. That was the largest revenue raiser in the infrastructure bill, $28 billion. And it became controversial because there was no parameters were put over the definition of broker. And it became very controversial within that crypto asset community. Senator Portman from Ohio, who introduced that provision, explained in a floor statement that he did not intend that be broadly construed, and we'll have to see how that plays out in regulations because it became enacted. The last one, and the one that I'm sure our members are interested in, is the early termination of the employee retention credit. That originally was available until 12/31/21, so the end of this year, another 5 weeks. But they sunset that provision 9/30/21. So September 30th, that sunset. The act was not signed into law until November 15th. All right, so you have a 6 week gap between when it was law and when it sunset retroactively. Mm-hmm. So the issue was, were there CPAs who advised their clients to take advantage of a credit that was legal at the time they advised them? Were there businesses that needed the money and took advantage of it legally, and now they may have to pay it back? And that's the issue. AICPA did submit a letter to Congress pointing out the confusion that was rampant and the concerns, for example, that Congress, IRS could apply penalties against these amounts that have to be repaid, which would not at all be equitable. And also that they should not only waiving those penalties, but they should figure out some kind of reasonable payback schedule.
Interesting. Have you heard anything back yet from?
There is a lot of discussion about it. We surfaced this issue. It garnered a lot of conversation on Capitol Hill. There's some conversation about understanding the concerns, and what we're trying to dig into right now, we have a sense that at least the penalty, there may be some direction to Treasury to waive the penalties.
Okay.
There has been some conversation about in this reconciliation bill, which is the second bill, the Build Back Better bill, mm-hmm. could possibly have a provision to, again, reinstate the credit for the rest of the year. My sense is that may not happen, but there seems to be a better chance of waiving the penalties. We just don't know yet.
That's it. That sounds like Congress in a nutshell right there. But
exactly.
Well, let's talk about that second bill then, and where it stands as of this recording, which is the day before Thanksgiving. So passed the House, correct? And we're still waiting to hear what is going to happen on the Senate side. What do you
hear? Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's important that you talked about this recording being made the day before Thanksgiving, because things changed so quickly. Mm-hmm. In Washington. So we have a little bit of a holiday reprieve about changes. Congress is off this week for the holidays, but they'll be back next week, and the Senate will take up this bill, and it will change. So the Build Back Better bill was passed by the House a couple of weeks ago. I think it was the 3rd or 4th of November, and it will go to the Senate. So here's what changed with that bill. Originally, the negotiations were actually between the House and the Senate. The House was trying to craft a bill that would be agreeable to the Democrats in the Senate, so that when it was passed in the House, they knew it would be signed on to automatically by the Senate, and that would be that. It would be done. After the election day, the beginning of November, things changed, where the Democrats did not fare well. They lost the gubernatorial race in Virginia. The incumbent governor in New Jersey, a Democrat, narrowly won his race. And so some of the more progressive members of that Democratic caucus in the House said, you know what, I was giving up on things I thought should be in this bill, and I need to be able to say I voted for them. I need to tell my constituents, whatever happens in the Senate, I made sure they got into the House bill, and I voted on it. And so that's what happened. You saw the original draft of that bill, which came out of the Ways and Means Committee on September 27th, was 2,500 pages. The Rules Committee of the House carved it back to about 1,700 pages. But after the election, there was a draft that came out, additional manager's amendments to that draft. It went back up to 2,200 pages for that very reason that I explained, meaning that we know that the Senate will not approve everything that's in the House bill. It's not just tax items. There are a lot of where I described the infrastructure bill that was already signed into law as a traditional infrastructure bill. This is more non-traditional and includes environmental, educational, social safety net infrastructure, if you will.
I got you.
Like paid family leave, which you would think would be universally adhered to by members of the Democratic caucus. I can tell you that there are the constituents like it, including it's very positive in surveys, even with Republican constituents. But it's not entirely bought into. And so that could be somewhat controversial. There are other provisions as well, and frankly, some of the revenue tax provisions, and we probably should talk about them. There've been a lot of changes,
mm-hmm. Such as, well, let's talk about some of those.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of those. So you mentioned, you know, what's changed in the Biden administration? Have there been any surprises in the last year? So, even when a candidate was running, his campaign talked about corporate income tax rate increases. Mm-hmm. That was almost assured. And then at the beginning of his administration, something called the Treasury Green Book, which is a picture of what the administration would like to see in its budget, understanding, though, that the budget is enacted by Congress. So this Green Book goes to Congress and says, this is what we're interested in. Then Congress has to enact it. That had a corporate rate increase. The first version of the Build Back Better bill had a corporate rate increase of 26.5%. Increasing the current 21% corporate rate up to 26.5%.
Gotcha.
Okay. That's a better way of explaining it. There were also individual ordinary income tax rate increases. So there was in the campaign, in the Green Book, and the first draft, same thing, increasing the old highest marginal corporate rate, individual rate, to 39.6%. That had been dropped in tax reform in 2017. Okay, that's out. There was a short-lived billionaires tax. People may or may not remember that. Senator Wyden, chair of the Finance Committee, surfaced the billionaire tax. It had been discussed for a couple of weeks. That's not in there. Capital gains and dividend rate increases, gone. Changes to QBI, the Section 199 Cap A, qualified business income, gone. people who do estate tax planning, there were a bunch of changes that were proposed. Those are gone. For example, the early sunset of the increased unified credit. So remember with TCJA, the unified credit was practically doubled at the end of 2017, and then yearly increases to that amount. So I think it exceeds, what, $11 million a person. But almost all of the individual and estate changes were automatically set to sunset 12/31/25.
Okay.
All right. The early version of this Build Back Better bill brought that forward to 12/31/21.
Wow.
So that meaning that it would jump back to about half of what the unified credit was. There were also restrictions on the way the estate assets were valued and changes to grantor trust rules. And those are now all gone, all right? Estate planners still need to remember that there a lot of changes are scheduled to take place 12/31/25, but there's still 3 years. I think that's an opportunity for CPAs to pay attention, because we'll get into those conversations again. And it's always best to take advantage of that unified credit when it's high. If you utilize that, for example, for gifts or gifts into trust, then even if the unified credit does drop down in the future, you can still take advantage of the high nature of that today. So that's something to look at. But anyway, all those rules are out of the bill. They're not in the bill.
Crazy. I mean, things just don't get any simpler, do they? Tax season is fast approaching. I mean, what else should CPAs be paying attention to at this point? I mean, a lot of that is out of their hands as the negotiations continue on Capitol Hill, but what is happening that they should be paying attention to right now?
Well, right. So that's the question. All those items are out. What's in? What do they need to pay attention to? So What replaced all those items? A 15% corporate alternative minimum tax based on book income. We're not really fans of AMTs because they're not transparent. Taxpayers don't really know what their ultimate liability may be. Mm-hmm. We're particularly opposed to this one because it's based on book income. It's based on book income, and it sort of merges the tax and accounting concepts of and influences of how you calculate tax. And we don't think that's at all healthy. And frankly, there's a bit of pushback, even though it's in the House bill. We'll see what happens. They added a 1% excise tax on the repurchase of corporate stock. They expanded the net investment income tax for individuals, estates, and trusts. And even though they didn't raise the highest marginal individual rate, they did add a surcharge on high-income individuals, estates, and trusts. So for individuals, there's a 5% of the taxpayer's modified AGI in excess of $10 million and an additional 3% surcharge on modified AGI in excess of $25 million. Those are pretty high, but just keep in mind that for estates and trusts, those surcharges kick in at $200,000 and $500,000, not at $10 million and $25 million. And the one change that was added that will grab the attention of Marylanders, the salt cap was revised. So originally that salt cap in the House bill went up to $72,500.
Okay.
It was further modified at the very last moment to $80,000.
Okay.
But here's how it works, and it's a revenue raiser. Okay. Interestingly, it's a revenue raiser. So this is how it works. For 2021, there's a in the House bill, a increased SALT caps, state and local tax deduction, if you itemize. That's at $10,000 today. It was raised to $80,000.
Wow.
From 2021 through 2030. For 2031, it drops to $10,000. And then after 2031, the cap goes away.
Okay.
Remember that I said that most of the individual changes from TCJA sunset at 12/31/25.
Uh-huh.
That means this $10,000 SALT cap goes away at 12/31/25. They made changes to say that that cap that was supposed to go away 1/1/26 doesn't really go away until 1/1/32.
Okay.
So by having a cap extended to 32, that's a revenue raiser, mm-hmm. even though in the short term years, for certain individuals, the cap is raised and it helps certain individuals. There is an issue I see in that one where you have that one year, there's a SALT cap in 2030, $80,000, 2031, $10,000, 2032, no cap.
Goes away.
Right, it goes away. So they did put in the bill a statement directing Treasury to create or issue anti-avoidance regulations so that there isn't abuse of that situation. But we know anyway, even before the SALT cap was instituted, a lot of people paid a year in advance. Maybe they made their January 2015 payment by December 31st to gap the money in an earlier year. Those were all legal to do if you're a cash basis taxpayer, to pay up to a year in advance. So we'll see what happens with that. But that was also added.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the question most people will say, what are the effective dates? Most of the effective dates are 2022. There are several that are not. This SALT cap increase is one that is not. It's effective now for this 2021, all of 2021.
Interesting. I guess, and I know time is getting short on us, and I wanted to talk a little bit before I let you go about what's going on at the IRS that CPAs need to be aware of. Of course, last couple of years have been absolutely crazy in terms of, you know, delays and the IRS's ability to respond and all of those types of things. So, I mean, what are you seeing right now at the agency that is going to impact the jobs that CPAs are doing this year?
Well, yeah, that's important to talk about. Let me just one concluding remark about the legislation, because sure. People want to know about this, the timing. The Senate comes back in next week. They have limited floor schedule in December before they break for Christmas. They have to deal with a continuing resolution when they first come back, because that expires. Continuing resolution to fund the government expires December 3rd, a defense authorization bill, possibly taking care of the debt ceiling yet again, which is expected to expire. They talked about December 3rd, but that was an approximation. It really depends on how much Treasury borrows and when they borrow it. They'll have to deal with all of that. But my best guess is this, that a bill will pass just before Christmas, possibly even somewhere up to the first week of January, somewhere between the 23rd or 24th of December and the first week of January. We will see changes to the House bill. They'll send it back to the House. The House will eat those changes and the Build Back Better bill will be enacted somewhere around Christmas time. All right.
Which again, we've seen this before in recent years, these types of changes coming in like right toward the end of the year, that's going to impact, you know, getting forms ready and how CPAs kind of do their work too. Is that kind of a concern at this point?
That's a minor concern. I mean, IRS is pretty good at dealing with these last minute changes and getting the forms out. And I, as I said, most of the provisions are prospective, so they won't impact 2021. The SALT cap, which is likely to change, I think there'll be something, but it's possible that it'll change in the Senate. A different type of a SALT cap in the Senate, but that is projected to be 2021. So that would have to change the forms and the instructions. So, they'll still need guidance to come out from Treasury and IRS, and CPAs will want to know what they have to advise their clients on early in the year. So we'll be looking at that. So you asked about IRS. It is critically important to all of our constituents. We went from a bad 2020 tax season to a worse 2021 tax season to a 2022 tax season that may not be any better. IRS is still behind in some processing we've been discussing with them. We're having some conversations about e-file issues in some of the disaster states where they have a January 3rd due date because of the disasters they're running. They can't e-file right now because the system is shut down for reprogramming for the upcoming year. And it won't reopen until it's shut down now. It won't reopen until the end of January, the earliest. So we're having conversations about ways to eliminate paper. We don't want people who are filing returns by January 3rd to have to do it in paper. We know the disaster that looms. They're going to have returns filed by paper with overpayments applied, and the returns won't even be processed. So we're working to eliminate paper. That's the catchphrase for us. Eliminate the need to contact the IRS. If you have to contact them, it's better to call the practitioner priority hotline and not do something in writing. We're trying to get them to liberalize the abatement rules for penalties, first time abate and reasonable cause. That we're having conversations about that and ways to do it over the phone, not send anything in mail. We're having conversations, although frankly, these are longer term ways to increase the electronic accessibility for practitioners of client information and to do it easily. Ways to make it easier to get powers of attorney online. IRS is talking about coming online this filing season with artificial use of the artificial intelligence on the phone, ways to get installment agreements through discussions with bots so that you don't have to talk to a live person, meaning they want to expand the availability of phone chats through the use of artificial intelligence. That will be coming online during the filing season. Some of it maybe not until later in filing season, but they're hoping to do that. Also, there's talk of increased funding of IRS, some of it for compliance, which we believe should happen. But we think when there's funding increases and we push for this, funding has to be threefold. Yes, compliance, but also for taxpayer services and also for the IT infrastructure to hold the whole thing up. So we're pushing for all of that.
So yeah, you guys are a little bit busy then at this point.
But, a little bit busy. Yeah, I mean, it's a hard thing to tell CPAs to get ready for filing season. There are some strategies that people can take in terms of taking a look at their client base and are there clients that really are more troubled than they're worth? And when you have such a horrible filing season experience, do you want to deal with clients who are a hassle and may not even pay you anyway? Maybe it's a good idea to look at how you take clients on maybe getting rid of some of the existing clients that are more trouble than they're worth. And really the way to approach it is that you tell them that you're going in a different direction and you want to make sure that they have CPAs who can better service what they need. And maybe, you know, there may be some smaller firms that really want them anyway, and you can refer them. But that's the idea, is to take a look at your client mix now before things get really hot and heavy and into the next filing season.
Well, great advice. And thanks as always, Ed, for being here, for your insights and your information. Well appreciated. Thank you so much. Great stuff there from Ed Carl, Vice President of Taxation at the AICPA. You can learn more and get just a ton of resources by visiting either macpa.org/tax or aicpa.org/tax. Also, a couple of things for your calendar. Ed's going to be a guest during the Maryland Association of CPAs Town Hall Meeting and Professional Issues Update on December 17th. That one-hour program is free for MACPA members, so don't miss that. And the MACPA also has a two-hour tax update with renowned tax expert Tony Nitti coming up on December 9th. You can find out more and register for both of those programs by visiting macpa.org. And finally, don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. And these are strategic aptitudes, really, that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering these future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And that's it, gang. That's all I got. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again soon.